Up next, the Financial Times and Scientific Research. Way back in June, you know, when life was good and some of us could actually look forward to retiring one day, Congressman Rush Holt, Democrat from New Jersey, decried the state of federal funding of scientific research, saying we will have not lived up to our responsibility to fund fully those efforts, warnings that we were risking our status as a scientific superpower and fearing that many scientists' jobs will be lost. And Holt urged Congress not to cut back on funding for the Department of Energy and National Science Foundation. Well, that was then, and you know the story since then. Our financial markets have unraveled. Our government pledged huge sums of money for an economic bailout. So where does that leave science? Has it gone from the frying pan back there now into the fire? Joining me now, back with us, is Democrat Rush Holt, who is, represents the 12th District of New Jersey in the House of Representatives. And in his other life, he is a plasma physicist, and he joins us from West Windsor, New Jersey. Welcome to Science Friday.
Ira, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Is it a scarier time now for science?
Well, it's not
funding-wise
per se. I mean, yeah. I think it's a scarier time for everybody.
Yeah.
It's a tough economic situation, you know. And let me say, I hope the point that I was making last January is not that we need to look after jobs for scientists. I mean, science should not be considered a make-work program for people in lab coats, but rather the other way around. What does science mean for jobs? Not what, in other words, how are we going to use science to build productivity, to produce economic innovation and job growth, as well as economic growth and improved quality of life?
Are we going to be able to do that in this financial situation the government finds itself?
Well, of course, no one knows how this is going to play out. The real question is what happens to government revenue over the next couple of years. If it's a deep recession or a depression, as some people are suggesting, then government revenue will fall and any government programs will be curtailed, and certainly in the private sector, investment in research will be curtailed, and people will, so to speak, eat their seed corn. If there is money to spend at all, I would argue that to stimulate the economy, we should be doing things like, well, extending unemployment benefits and things that actually put money in circulation. But at least as important is to invest in science, into research, so that we end up doing things that we will, with the money that we are spending, doing things that we will want anyway, that will improve people's quality of life.
Let's talk about a few other issues, if we might. In a letter to the Times, the New York Times, back in July, you wrote, "It is time we stopped using elections as beta tests for unreliable electronic voting machines. Despite failed attempts so far, Congress should still pass a national standard requiring that all voters can record their votes on paper and that in every election, randomly selected precincts be audited." How are we doing in that regard?
Well, of course, you and your experts and your listeners have talked about this a lot over the years. We are in a situation now where roughly a third of voters next month will vote on electronic voting systems that are not only demonstrably unreliable, but really unverifiable. And that's the real problem. There will always, in any voting system, there are going to be some problems. Voters are ingenious in finding ways to do the unexpected on election day, you know, by circling the boxes instead of putting X's in them, or by doing something that the machine wasn't programmed to do if it's electronic. What is really important is that there be a way of verifying what the voter intended to do, and the voter has to be the one who can conduct that verification. The voter, because it's a secret ballot, is the only one who can know whether what's recorded reflects the voter's intention. And the only practical way of doing that is with paper ballots that voters can inspect, and then there is something real to check if there is any question. In fact, I would call for an automatic audit, even if there is no question, because you might find that after you do the audit, that indeed there is a question. Mm-hmm. So about a third of Americans will be voting without the ability to actually verify that their vote is recorded properly. I imagine most of the voting will go fine, but I'm sure in a lot of places around the country there will be questions, and in many cases those questions cannot be resolved mm-hmm. because there's no voter verified record.
And
that's why I've called for paper records.
Right. And especially because if all indications are accurate about the size of the turnout this year, there's going to be a lot of folks at the polling places.
That's right. And, of course, that'll cause problems whatever system you use. If you have to have paper, well, that means you have to print up even more because you're not sure how many voters you're going to have. If you're using machines, you'll have to, make do with the number of machines you've got because it's too late to order any more.
Right.
And you'll have to have efficient ways to manage the lines of people if they're if there is that kind of turnout.
We've had a couple of experts on offering an interesting solution, saying if you have a very long line, and if you do have a readable paper ballot that people can mark and then it gets read by the machine, so you have that paper trail, if things get really long, they might just hand out the ballots to people waiting in line. And then they could hand them in and have them recorded as they go through.
Well, that's only if you have that kind of system. But in some, in some jurisdictions, mm-hmm. in fact, in very many jurisdictions, you're not allowed to vote that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that won't work.
Yeah.
You have to go into the voting booth with the electronic machine.
Let me ask you one other question before I let you go, and that is about the FBI and the Justice Department saying that they were closing the books on the anthrax investigation, and you disagree with that.
Well, I've followed this closely. Not only did the anthrax attacks originate in my district, as best anyone can tell, the letters that had the spores were mailed from central New Jersey. They were sorted in a mail facility next door to my congressional district. So and my office in Washington was one of the contaminated offices.
Mm-hmm.
So I followed it closely, and I'm not at all pleased with the way the investigation has been conducted. I think it not only reflects some poor investigative procedure, but the scientific forensics have created a problem because, like so many people in the country, most of the people in the FBI aren't very good at thinking scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that evidence was collected and the way conclusions were drawn from the evidence would, I think, give most of your listeners pause.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've called for a commission to look at this, kind of like the 9/11 commission, probably not on that scale, but to look at the actual occurrences and also to make recommendations on what we should be doing to protect Americans from bioterrorism, to detect, and to investigate and to prosecute and so forth as might be appropriate in the future.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Holt, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us.
Always good to be with you.
Good
Thanks,
luck,
Ira.
You're welcome. Democrat Rush Holt, 12th District of New Jersey in the House of Representatives. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.